Welcome, sports fans. We're your hosts, Carl,
Alex,
Jay, and this is Momentous Play.
Momentous Play is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated sells Guild Ball at the maximum discount allowed by Steamforge. Order $50 or more in product and receive free shipping on domestic orders or reduced shipping on international orders. You can find their web store at www.discountgamesinc.com.
Welcome to Momentous Play. At the start of the episode, we will start a stopwatch. After 30 minutes, an alarm will sound, and the podcast will conclude. The clock has started. So, joining us again, we have Trent and James on the Ozma Momentum Something podcast.
So, Momentous Play Oz.
Okay, great. So, last week, we wanted to talk about momentum. We were unable to get through the topic in a half hour. So this is going to be a playoff series, I guess, where it's best of two. I don't know. But
Erica's turning everything into some crappy football analogy.
Playoff series. Love it.
Okay, so we're basically just going to pick up right where we left off. So last time we left off talking about bonus time, and now we're going to commence talking about spending momentum on Take a Breather, Lad.
Mm. So I think Take a Breather is a very important use of momentum, and you can tell when a player is not very experienced because they don't use momentum to heal. It's a potential 8 hit points or 8 health on a player returning that you may have left very close to death. I mean, the average health on most players is 12 to 14, so you're giving them 2/3 of their health back. That is astronomical. It costs you 3 momentum to do that and has to happen over 2 activations. But the ability for you to heal a player from near death to basically near full can totally change
the
table state.
It can make it so your opponent feels like they almost completely wasted their turn.
Yep, absolutely. The timing of them is crucial. If you do it when a player is activating before they've done anything. So let's say your player's got, you know, 2 health left. They activate, they spend a momentum to heal, they charge into a player. If that player then knocks them down, that's their activation over because you've already used the momentum to either heal or clear conditions. So the other aspect of it is the timing. The clearing condition side of things, knockdown is a condition, which means if you don't clear knockdown, your model does not move anywhere. So against someone like engineers or players that have the ability to knock down or counter charge, if you don't have a momentum in the bank to clear it, you basically going to lose all the influence on your player. So you really have to think about how to actually utilize the momentum, whether to clear conditions, whether to save it for a knockdown, or whether to heal. It's tough. It's a really tough one. The other side of things is when you've got the 2 momentum heal or the 2 momentum clear conditions on a friendly player within 8 inches. If you do clear a knockdown on a model with that one, what's to say that your opponent won't just go and knock them down again?
Right.
Yeah. They can stand up again as well.
Well, they can. They have to use a single momentum to clear their own. No, they have to use a momentum to clear their own.
Sure, so but they can you've only
wasted, yeah, so you've wasted 3 momentum to get that off. So you would have been better off healing for 4 as opposed to clearing conditions because you have to clear the conditions anyway when you start that turn. So the timing and which one you choose is very difficult.
They both have different applications against different guilds as well. So, for example, against alchemists, clearing conditions are going to be much more valuable than healing. But sometimes they're not nearly as effective as well. Sometimes healing, when you're playing against butchers, feels like you're not achieving anything because the ability, the ease in which they can do 4 damage does not outweigh how precious that momentum is to you. So you've got to evaluate every situation.
When you're talking about alchemists, it often seems like the right call to clear conditions. But if alchemists only have burning on you, that's only 1 damage. It slows you down, but it's only 1 damage. If you're already, you know, in and around the melee, you don't need the movement, you may be better off healing 4 damage because you're only going to take 1 in the max maintenance phase. Poison's the same. It doesn't even slow you down. It's just 2 damage. So over two turns, it's going to do 4 damage. But if you heal twice, you're going to heal 8 damage. So the one thing that you then look at clearing conditions is when they have two conditions on you. That's when it becomes
value for money.
Yeah, it becomes more valuable doing it then.
You got to be careful against alchemists. It can be a bit of a trap as well, because say you've got the one condition on you, it's fire, but you need the extra 2 inches of distance to get into combat. So you go, okay, I'll clear conditions. Then they can go, right, he's cleared conditions. Someone else can clear it off him, but it'll cost them 2 momentum. So everyone gang up on that guy, put like 3 effects on him, and he can't deal with them effectively. So yeah.
It's a fascinating aspect of the game, I think, because not a lot of games have healing mechanics that work. And this one actually really works, because if you don't utilize it, you'll get smashed. But if you overuse it, you're going to get smashed as well, because the one thing we haven't talked about with momentum is how it impacts on the following turn with initiative. But yes, we'll get onto that a little bit later. So
That one comes with experience. You'll go, okay, I think that the key point in this one is two conditions. I'll need to clear it, and then I'm getting value for money. If that charge that the fire was preventing you from doing is so critical, it's going to net you, a net gain of 4 momentum, then it might be worth clearing. It's just one of those things you'll experience and grow.
The thing that blows my mind, right? So you go to yourself, okay, do I clear this fire so I can get into a charge? Who am I charging? Am I charging Fangtooth? Yes. Do I have 1-inch melee? No, I have reach. So I can engage Fangtooth from outside of his melee range, so his knockdown becomes irrelevant. Great. Clear conditions is the right play. I have 1-inch melee. They have momentum to counterattack. I have no dodges on my playbook. I have no knockdown on my playbook. Do I charge Fangtooth to clear conditions? He counterattacks, you knock down, you do nothing. Your turn is over. Do I charge someone else? What do I do? That whole decision making process.
That's a high skill cap kind of thing as well there.
Is where it actually comes down to when to use your momentum. So, okay, cool.
Okay, so any final thoughts, I guess, on Take a Breather or Come On, Mate?
Use them lots if you can. If you're winning the momentum race, which we'll talk about shortly, and you have the luxury of doing them, that's probably the best ability to use as well.
Mm. The timing of it is important. As it gets on to the end of the turn, your momentum and your opponent's momentum will often either be very similar or completely different, and that can determine when you spend it. If you know you're going to lose the initiative on the next turn, you should be spending all of your available momentum on healing players. One thing to note about Take a Breather, Lad, is that the one that you target someone else, Jay? You've got the book in front of you. I'm pretty sure it is.
Take a Breather is on yourself.
Right.
Come on, mate.
Come on, mate. You can target multiple players with Come On, Mate with one player. So if you have 6 momentum, you could heal 3 players for 4 health if you wanted to. However, you cannot target the same player twice, but you can target the same player with Come On, Mate and Take a Breather, Lad. Right. So
if you're losing the if you're in the final activation of a turn, you're losing the momentum race, let's say 6-3, your chances of winning the next turn, I think it's like 1 in 6 at that point. So what you can actually do is say, well, I'll heal myself for 1 of those momentum, I'll heal someone else for 4 health. I'll still lose the momentum race, but I've gained 8 health for the price of
right.
a 6th chance at winning the first at winning the next turn. So,
okay,
good use.
So next one is going to be gliding, which will allow you to ignore gliding. Rough terrain.
Gliding is one of my favorite. Oh man!
So
people often use terrain on the table and think, oh yeah, they can't reach me here because it's -2 speed. Or they push you into a forest and they're like, ha ha, you're stuck now. And then you just go, I spend 1 to glide, rants along the ground. It's awesome.
It's magic. It's literally magic carpet ride in.
Yeah.
In
tabletop. I like to bring
it. It only works on rough ground. Right
between the sound machine.
Sorry, I like that. Move across rough ground without penalty.
So
it doesn't allow you to traverse obstructions.
Because it will get through foul odor on people like Fangtooth and Casket. So
yep.
So this is a kind of a side question for you guys, but it seems like each play area, the amount of terrain that people use varies quite a bit. I've seen a lot of places that don't like that use very minimal terrain, up to fairly heavy. what's your personal preference?
The organized play document says that you should have 5 to 7 pieces. You should have one barrier, one fast terrain, one forest, and as many obstructions as you like. And I would generally vary those first three, the barrier, the fast ground, and the forest, with how many they have. But, I think 5 to 7 pieces. I think if you don't have terrain on the table, you're not doing it correctly.
Terrain is critical as well. Players like Stoker and Tower actually are shit players worse players without terrain. So if you're not using terrain, you're not. Yes, it can take a while to relearn the terrain rules as opposed to other games. But if you're not using terrain after a handful of games, you are doing a massive injustice because change game significantly.
Yeah, players like Shark and is it Angel Moops that has.
Or is it Siren? Both have light-footed.
Yeah. So they ignore terrain. And that ability is obviously costed into a player. So with no terrain, you're unfairly penalising those players. I played a game the other week where I was using Boar and Stave, the big fat lard, pushed Boar. He dropped the barrel and pushed Boar backwards into a forest 4 inches. And Stave just sat there, giving Boar the finger, what are you going to do, dickhead? You're knocked down and you're, 9 inches away from me, so you got nothing, pal, nothing. So I activated Boiler and cast Mark Target on Stave. And then in Boar's activation, I cleared conditions, i.e. cleared his knockdown, and then I paid a momentum to glide. And suddenly I was charging Stave after he just barrel lobbed me the fuck out of dodge. So that was happy times. That was awesome.
The imagery of Boar gliding as well. It's like one of those Disney movies where the big fat character gets up on their tippy toes. It's like...
I can show you the world.
So the next use of momentum is going to be heroic plays. Legendary plays obviously don't require a... momentum, but if you are going to use a heroic play on your character, then that will require momentum.
This is Moopsy's jam.
Heroic plays are just untapped gold. They are really good. The fact that you can use them every single turn, it's actually quite a defining feature of a guild like the Brewers as well. Basically, before the release of MASH, instead of having a legendary play, all their characters had heroic plays. And so once you can sort of get the momentum train rolling with a character, let's say Tapper goes in and beats on some guy's face and generates a bunch of momentum, it actually enables so many elements of other players that allow them to really shine, and then they're able to contribute in a greater way towards the team's momentum train for that turn. So Hooper's able to get +2 attack, and if he's got 3 influence, that's an extra 6 dice that you're rolling over 3 attack. Awesome ability. Some characters that really defines them as well, that their specific ability and contribution to the game. For me, when I was starting, Jark didn't really do a ton for me, and I looked at his heroic play and it took a while for it to trigger, but if Shark's able to lock down a player, giving them using his legendary play on them and gutting, stringing them, they're -8 speed. And yes, things like passing them the ball can get them back into combat, but if he's able to say, everyone within 3 inches, go 4 inches away from me, that can just win you an entire turn if they can't counterattack. So I'm sure I haven't touched on
board too.
Push them off the board, glide over a pond, and push Honor off the table. Cheers. that can completely change the game. I'm sure I haven't touched on some elements, but heroic plays define a lot of players, and I'm actually sort of surprised at how prevalent they are throughout the game. If there's 8 guilds with roughly 7 or 8 players, 8 players each, and the union having a couple more, if there's 70 odd players, I think probably 25 of them have heroic players.
Are you? I'm surprised they're not more prevalent. That's an interesting observation of yours, Moot. There's only one in Butchers. Every brewer has it. So that's fine, or every brewer except MASH. Jark has one, but there's no other heroics in Fish.
That's fair. I just feel like they are more powerful when used correctly than character plays. And so they sort of, I might be wrong there, but they sort of define the player as not overpowered or anything, because they're costed appropriately, but they really compensate a lot. They lose other abilities in order to gain that heroic play.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like if you are not using a player's heroic play well or appropriately, then you're wasting value you're not, yeah, and you should be considering probably a different character if it never ends up clicking with you.
I'll talk about Meathook because she's got a heroic play and she's a player that a lot of people consider quite poor. She's got one influence that she generates and can have up to four. She automatically causes bleed on her attacks and she's tack six. If a model already has bleed, she gets an extra 2 inches in her charge versus them. She also has scything blow, so that's pretty cool. But I played a lot of games with Meathook recently. And one thing that a lot of players don't realize is that her heroic play is any model suffering a condition within her 3-inch aura, or pulse, it's actually a pulse, will suffer -4 move and will have an additional damage point done to them. So oftentimes you play a very damage-dealing sort of team and Meathook doesn't make that team. But if you have, let's say, Brisket, and she's got Dirty Knives, and she throws out a couple of poison because it's a condition. Meathook's ability is something that will shut them down. I played against Fish one time, and Meathook had one influence, and Shark was standing right beside her. She walked over to Shark, because I won the initiative. My first activation. Punched him, generated momentum, and then said, "Shark, you are now -4 speed." And Shark was just like, okay, well, I don't like that being done to me. That's what I like doing to other people instead. So, yeah, it's got a lot of interesting applications, but if you don't have the setup for the rest of the team, like, you're not going to get as much value as you could. So, yeah, as Jay said, if you're not using it, you're probably not getting the value out of the player.
It does force them to activate in a different way as well. With influence, you give someone like Ballista 6 influence and he's going to shoot you 3 times, right? You can do that the first activation. It doesn't depend on how the turn has progressed. Basically, generation of momentum in order to activate those heroic plays is going to depend on how successful your turn has been. Jark will basically never activate first, or 99% of the time will not activate first in a turn. You need your buddies to get together and earn him that that momentum so that he can do it outside of him walking up, punching someone, getting the momentum for himself. So it's sort of dependent on your opponent more than it is on your allocation of influence. Right.
Yes.
Okay, so I believe that is all the ways that momentum is spent. Have I missed anything that you guys can think of?
No.
Okay, so
I'm pretty shit player.
Fair. So let's talk then.
He takes these teams where he only puts one influence. He takes the guys who generate one influence because he doesn't think it's a very valuable resource. So.
So let's talk about that. We've alluded to this already, but the momentum race. What is the momentum
race? I love that term. I'm gonna claim that term. I coined that term in one of my articles. Okay. I'm the only person who's ever used that expression in the history of Guild Ball. So,
that's
good. Patented by Trent Dennison. The momentum race is basically you determining who is going to win the initiative, and it's a constantly changing thing that you have to be adapting to at every stage of the turn. It's basically you have your momentum. You have, say, 3 or 4, and your opponent has 1 or 2. You are much more likely to win the initiative in the following turn. And unless your opponent has left a model with 8 influence left as their last activation, in which case they may have the potential to generate 8 momentum or more, you can usually gauge how much momentum you're going to have and how much your opponent's going to have. And that, as we said earlier, will dictate what you do with your momentum in the later activations of the turn. Players like Obulus can also dictate that anyway. If you're playing Obulus and he hasn't used his legendary play yet, you want to spend all your momentum anyway. But for someone like Fish, winning the initiative on a turn will basically be a goal, will basically be a free goal. Is that a fair statement, Moosey?
Yes.
Yep.
In most situations, sure.
Winning initiative for someone like Butchers will usually be a takeout. Winning initiative for someone like Brewers will usually be Stave can knock down maybe 2 players, and until they generate momentum, those 2 players are completely neutered. It could also be I'm going to drag a player closer towards. For someone like the Morticians, it's going to be Ghast going for unmasking and then knockdowns from 2 inches so that players can't stand up if they haven't got 2-inch melee. For someone like Alchemist, it's going to be a blind, putting out a blind so that your key players can't make attacks. There's lots and lots of things that the first turn will get you that is very important. And the only way that you can guarantee that is winning the momentum race. So, Moopsy?
Yeah, it's key. I've played a couple of guilds now, and every game I play, I basically always want to win the opportunity to go first.
Well, of course you do. You get to do whatever you want with no counterattacks, no defensive stance, nothing. Nothing they can do to stop you.
I've got a hunch that might sort of maybe change in the future, because we've seen it sort of begin to happen with plot cards. So because it does feel like one of those abilities. This game is so interactive that it's one of the rare instances where you can do what you want, basically untouched.
I disagree. I didn't think it's as big a deal, but I'll talk about that in a minute.
Sure. If someone like Shark is able to set up a turn, go first, gut and string, feet, pew, 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 he can basically say, look, I just won that whole turn for my team, which means I'm going to win the next turn as well. In some situations, it can basically just be very overpowering. So if you're able to win that race via the methods that Trent said, it's possibly the greatest use of momentum.
Fair.
Okay, so I guess I have a counterpoint or a counter question. I was listening to, an episode of Guild Ball tonight, and one of the hosts said that...
Was that one of your one of the things you do late at night to help yourself get to sleep, or...?
That's private time.
I think it's more sadistic than that, but yeah.
And he said that he tended to be more of the philosophy of he was fine going second any... He felt like it was a skill you needed to develop, the ability to play well going second, and even potentially have the strategy of being willing to go second every turn until it gets to what you feel is going to be the final turn of the game, and then you have to push to be able to get that turn for the final turn.
Yep.
Do you think that is a true statement? From what you said before, it sounds like you kind of disagree with it.
I'll just jump in real quick. There are definitely merits to...
James, you will never jump in quick.
there are definitely merits to, like, you're going to go second half the time anyway, unless
not.
Momentum building totally
is your thing. but you've got to obviously get used to it. But the ability to have that last activation in a turn can often be absolutely crucial. That's one thing I really appreciate about it. And there are obviously ways to capitalize on that. So taking extra activations like Avarice and Greed, Honor, being able to give someone superior strategy.
Really bully the end of turn. You idiot.
Bad luck. Bad luck. Should have jumped in quickly.
I did, and then you said, I'll just go first. I'm jumping for a bit. You dickhead. No, Avarice and Greed was actually what I was going to say. I spent a lot of games yesterday going second because I received the ball on zero occasions. And so my opponents were always getting the second turn. They were always getting to do what they wanted in the early stages of the game. And so I was basically finding myself activating second. And influence allocation is the key to activating second. Because when you go first, you'll usually load up a player because it's the only opportunity you get for a player to do something with no countering. But when you go second, you have to be a little bit more intelligent because you know that a player could potentially get taken out. If you load up a single player, I guarantee you that's the target they're going to go for. That makes it so easy for them to take that player out, and then your influence is wasted. So you need to spread it a little bit more. And if you do take Avarice and Greed, or you have the ability to have a second activation, an extra activation, what happens is at the end of the turn, you have two sequential activations, and that can be very powerful. Particularly if you've managed to get a player, like use repositions like a push dodge or chain grab or double push. If you've managed to manipulate their players who've already activated into a position where your players are now available to do things, and those two players go last, you can generate a lot of momentum and can actually change the board state, the momentum race or whatever. So going second is not always a disadvantage.
No, definitely not. Conversely as well, as opposed to allocating a player a bunch of influence, if you give them zero influence, it's basically possible for them to ignore them. There are some exceptions, like Kraken. He just likes to stand around and hope that you don't leave his melee range. But if it's like a little fighty sort of character or goal-scoring character, if you give them no influence, your opponent can basically sort of ignore them, which is a wasted body on the field.
It is. It's. I've actually found going second, and this is something I've been finding the more I play, kicking or receiving and first or second really have little impact if you know what you're doing. You can... A lot of early games, I was like, oh my God, man, why would you ever kick off? Like, what? Receiving is so much better. And I was like, oh, why? You'd never ever take second if you had the choice. But as I've played more games, the impact that the first turn has, kicking and receiving, can be mitigated by the play that you choose to kick off with and where you choose to kick the ball. And you go, Mipsy.
They're just different realities of how the game pans out. But for me, the perfect example is I played a game against Simon Hall early on, which was one of my first games against Simon and Masons. And if I received the ball, so Mallet kicked it off. I spent a lot of the turn passing it around, and then Mallet got tooled up, Mist ran up into place, he got a second activation, he advanced, and then he charged forward, and he literally killed Kraken by himself. Well, with the assistance of Mist, but he killed Kraken and was able to get momentum back up into the game because he had that last activation of the turn. He was able to say, I'm going to do this. As opposed to if he gets the ball, he kicks the ball around, the rest of the game is going to sort of progress as normal, but those first sort of turns getting into combat, people still have their tricks and ways that they're going to try and like get back into the momentum race against you.
I think that the story can basically be summed up with hashtag fuck up nips.
or Jay, every story.
Oh, okay. Okay, great.
Every story.
So the 5-minute warning got blown by ages ago because you guys were gibbering on. But
fuck up nips. That's always nips problem.
There you go. One of the best feelings in the world is like when you go first in the game and you either get that goal at the start or you take out an opponent player, especially one that if they have influence on it. And obviously the opponent's going to have their later activations to try to get back, but being able to exploit, I guess, going first in situations like those is always a great feeling in this game.
It is.
Definitely.
I wish people would take a little bit more time in thinking about the advantages of going second, because it is actually, there can be an advantage to it. Against someone like Butchers, who will take a player out usually in the first activation, yeah, it can seem like a tough sell going second. Against Fish can also seem like a tough sell, but if your last activation in the turn is to score a goal and win the momentum for next turn, that can be game-changing. That can be, oh, my next activation first in the first next turn, I'll charge forward, possess the ball again, and score another goal. That is actually something I've seen happen because, having last activation, it doesn't matter where they kick off to, you can get to the ball unless they want to kick off backwards.
There is an addictive quality. It's really satisfying when you kill a player that's loaded up with influence and they take that player off and they have to take the influence off the table as well. It's like, yes, good. Everything is proceeding as planned.
Yes. You know, it's my favorite thing to do is to kill him. She's got 6 influence. Simon fucking hates it. Oh my God.
Fuck up, Nips.
He hates it so bad. It's even better when you do it with Gutter. Fucking hates Gutter. Love Guild Ball. So, Jay, momentum as a summary, a crucial aspect of the game. The more you play, the more you realize how important it is and what a resource it is that can change the game. If you're using it correctly, you'll more than likely win.
Okay. Well, how convenient that is where the 30-minute time comes off. So we now go into bonus time, which is a great use of momentum.
I played a tournament recently. I played 4 games. I had fuck all influence, and I won because I spent momentum better. I'm going to say that. I'm going to put that out there. And because I'm an unbelievable player, but mostly because of the momentum thing.
And because you're great in bed. Let's just list all the reasons.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I drink the shit out of Brisket's bathwater, too.
Fair.
Yes, I got it back in there.
James, do you have any final thoughts?
No. Just look it out. No, I'm done.
I never thought that James would want to not say something.
Bathwater so bad, that's all.
Okay.
Let's drink the bathwater.
James, final thoughts from you? Or Trent, sorry. I'm gibbering now.
No, yeah, very good. I really like... The more I play the game, the more depth I find. And that, to me, is a hallmark of a great game. So it's very much like War Machine for me. I'm in the early stages of learning the game, but everything I do, I learn more about it, and I'm just loving it. So momentum is one of those things that you could probably talk about for hours and barely scratch the surface of when the right time to utilize which momentum ability and at what point. So continue onwards and upwards with a momentous Oz play.
It scratches my math itch as well. It's doing that. It's good.
Sweet. Okay, well, thank you again, gentlemen, and we'll hopefully have you on again sometime soon.
Thanks, you,
Jay. We hope you can come on an episode of Ozmentus Machine Australia soon.
Excellent.
Thanks for listening to Momentous Play. Tune in next week for another 30-minute podcast about Guild Ball.